I know. How is it possible that we would be talking about Ephesians and what we wear? So this is lesson one. So you did your first homework. I'm going to try to remember to open up first and say, were there any questions? This was a really simple lesson. Yes? Like, almost like, really? Come on, let's get some more into there. But if there were any questions or any comments about lesson one that you did? No? Okay. So go right into it. Remember that the context of Ephesians is really the context of the Greco-Roman world. And remember that it's not written just to the Ephesians. It's written to all of those Greco-Roman colonies and cities. And even in school right now, we're talking over and over again about the Greco-Roman lifestyle and how they lived, how they were governed, and what was going on in their religions. Remembering that one of the big things that was going on during that time was there's an awful lot of sickness. And sickness was always attributed to evil spirits, to demons. So there was a lot of that going on, as well as this power structure of Rome. And the power structure of Rome, as much as it was probably the greatest empire that we've known so far, it was, interestingly enough, very scattered. So, you know, they were in control of all these lands all the way around the Mediterranean. So when you look at the Mediterranean, it's these lands all the way around it. But they couldn't possibly, the emperor couldn't possibly govern from him on down. So there was all sorts of different ways of governing depending on who you were. But basically, it was a patronage system. So it was always a top-down thing. And it was always like you were always trying to juggle. Like, how can I possibly make the top person happy so that I can live my life? So between those two things, it was always a question of, how do I deal with power so that I can live a life of some kind of peace? You know, what do I need to do with the power that's above me? So they were always struggling with that. And particularly because they felt, most people felt they didn't have any control over their own lives, that there was this power always over them. So they needed to know how to deal with the power. If I know the power, what to deal with power, maybe I can have some peace. Which is why magic became such a big deal, because magic was a formula to ward off the power that had already oppressed you. So remember, I told you magic came in a lot because of the diseases and the sicknesses. And magic began with saying something over and over again, saying something particular over and over again, something actually secret. It was always a secret, but if you said it over and over again, that would give you power over this evil demon, usually, to leave. So that's why magic became so big. And magic was a big deal within the Greco-Roman world, as was emperor worship. And really, anybody who was high up was really considered some kind of a spiritual power because they had this unseen power over your life, of how your life went. So this, it was really the idea of unseen power. How do we deal with unseen power? What are we going to do with that? Now, as ancient as that sounds, and as much as we think we know about diseases, and we know it doesn't come from demons and all of that, we still deal with the same thing, right? We still deal with unseen power, whether it be spiritual power or whether it be power in the White House or power, you know, across the seas. There's still all sorts of power that we can find oppressive. Even living here in, you know, super affluent Naperville, there are still powers that we know that we have to deal with some way that we can make our lives peaceful. So we do the same thing. We use magic. We use formulas, right? A lot. In fact, it's one of the favorite things. You go into a regular Bible study, and the favorite thing in a Bible study is, give me the formula for how to do this so that I can live a peaceful life. Right? That's pretty much how we enter scriptural study a lot of the time, is that we look for a formula. So we do apply magic. Now, of course, magic becomes more complicated than that, but it's still the same kind of thing. We really like formulas. because it gives us a sense of power. Oh, here's something I can do, and this will do this. It's an if-then, right? We love if-thens. We love dualistic. We love if I do this, I get this, and we're done. So that's kind of what we're dealing with in Ephesians, what Paul is dealing with, because the Ephesians are asking, the rest of the Roman, Greco-Roman world that are coming to Christ are asking, well, if Christ was so powerful in dying for our sins and raising for us and giving us new life, does that new life give us power? How does it give us power? So that's what Paul is addressing is, well, there is power in the risen Christ, and there is power for you personally when you're living in him, when you're living in that perichoresis. So that's really where we're going today. So I'm going to kind of give you an idea of the power of God's presence first, and then I'm going to give you our own power of presence. So I'm going to do a lot of very, very little in the beginning of a biblical idea of God's power. But then I'm going to go, and this is another foundational thing so that when we get into Ephesians, really into the meat of it, you will see it in such a different light. You would just be so excited, I guarantee. But we're going to talk a lot about the social sciences, some of the research that they've done. And I think it'll be really interesting for you. So when we're talking about God's presence, when we talk about God being with us, Emmanuel, we understand that there's power in that. But what is it about God's presence that actually makes us feel both joy and comfort and peace, right? I mean, that's what the angel said when God was first incarnated, right? Was that I bring you news of great joy. It will be for all peoples, and it will be peace. So there's something about God's presence that actually brings to other people a joy and a peace, this wholeness. What is it then about his presence that is able to do that? One of the first things is the fact that God's presence actually manifests, it shows power. Within his own presence, him being with us actually shows power. In other words, because he exists in perichoresis, remember our perichoresis here? Because he exists in this, he has absolutely no fear that his wholeness or his worth will ever be lost. Why? Because the Father is holding up the Spirit, and the Spirit is holding up the Son, and the Son is holding up the Father. This is that perfect love where no matter the person, no matter what's happening with the person, there's always someone holding him up. And he knows that that holding up of himself, of his worth, remember that cohort means that the other always holds up the worth of the other. He doesn't have to worry that his worth will be lost or that his wholeness will ever be lost. He will always be whole. This mutual penetration of one into the other makes this very solid bond, this indestructible being, because the Father's always about holding up the Son and the Spirit. And the Spirit's always about holding up the Father and the Son, so that there's never a weakness of not being whole, of this splitting apart. Does that make sense? The interesting thing, even when I'm talking about that and thinking about this indestructible being, I kept thinking there's like this force. And then I realized, well, I think that's where we get some of those ideas of even Star Wars, the idea of the force. This is what they're talking about, this force. We innately know that there is a force of wholeness in the universe. And that is not surprising because God has said he's put eternity within our souls, within our hearts. We understand that that's part of the reality of the universe, even if it doesn't look like that. But because of that, that manifests power, that there it's an unbreakable wholeness. And because there has this power, this unbreakable wholeness, God's presence is also able to manifest vulnerability, this complete openness. because he has no fear of losing himself, no fear of losing his wholeness or his value or his worth, he's able to stand right out there and fully give himself to us. He doesn't have to hide. He doesn't have to present something different to us so that we like him. He's not afraid of losing himself because he's whole, because there's this power behind the wholeness of perichoresis, so that he can be fully present with us when he's with us. So the fact that he's with us is a withness that is absolutely open and fully vulnerable. Here I am completely. I don't have any need to hide myself or to protect myself. He doesn't have to protect himself, because protecting is always about keeping ourselves whole, right? But because that wholeness can't break, he doesn't have to do that. So he's able to be vulnerable and be fully present with us. And when you think about that, you don't ever think God is with you going, I just want to make sure she knows, like I'm really loved. I really love her. I want to make sure she knows that. He's never, you know how you feel sometimes where you just feel like they got to know that I'm kind, or I want them to know that I'm humble. There's never that with God. He's never like, I got to make sure they know this. Like, here I am. This is who I am. I'm whole. So that underlying confidence is powerful. And it's able to be vulnerable to us and be open to us. And in being vulnerable, then, it also manifests invitation. So his presence brings out an invitation to come share him, come share his life. That openness displays a trustworthiness. I'm completely open. Here I am. So you can trust who I am. It's a natural invitation to share who he is, because he's completely giving you him, himself. And that it's an invitation that's very compelling. And I say that knowing that we have experiences of presenting Christ that isn't compelling. But it's not because he isn't compelling. It's because we aren't compelling. So in himself, in his presence, he is completely compelling. I love that verse in Isaiah that talks about Jesus didn't look like this great, he wasn't this handsome, you know, rugged Jewish guy. It's that he had a marred looking, and yet he was, like, people couldn't keep their eyes off him. He was compelling in his presence, so that the incarnation of God had this presence. We talk about that, right? That someone has presence. That was God in Jesus Christ. He had this presence, and he does have this presence. So that in being open and really inviting into his life, it's because he's making this space, right, within himself. He's open, and there's space for you to come in. Like, there's none of these walls protecting himself. So you don't have to, like, can I come in here? Can I come in here? It's completely open, this invitation, so that there is space for you to come in, which is exactly how we talk about, right? Being images of God is making space to flourish. His very presence makes space for others to flourish. And all of that goes back to, that's very powerful. Just his presence is very powerful. Being unafraid to offer himself wholly without any kind of hiding, a compelling invitation, produces fruit. Because when he's open and people can come in, people can be who they are. And that means they grow. And that's multiplication. That's fruitfulness. That's what he meant by, when you reflect me, I want you to multiply. It's not just a have babies. It's this multiplication of give people space to come and be who they are and flourish and grow. So that multiplication is always talking about growth, from the garden to the great city and the end. That is power. So that God's presence is power. If that's true, and we're talking about how do I deal with the power, the unseen power in the world, what does God do with that power that he has just in his presence? Well, we know two things. Number one, he uses that power for us. Because real power, when we talk about power that God wants for us and for himself, is power that grows creation. It doesn't stifle growth. Power doesn't stifle growth. That's what you would do if you used power for yourself. You would stifle growth in others. If power was hoarded, then it would be stifling for others. Others wouldn't grow. And that's not the kind of power that we're talking about. So God uses it for us, for our growth, and he reveals that self-giving power through incarnation, through flesh, through the flesh of Jesus Christ. So that, and when I talk about incarnation, I don't mean just the birth of Christ. I mean his entire life, everything he did in the flesh. So that incarnation is a bigger idea than just the bearing of Jesus as a human being. But his whole life as a human being is how God actually reveals the fact that his presence has power. So that everything Jesus does puts forth this presence of God and this power that he has for us. Why does he do that? He does it in order to give us, and I love this verse that we have in 2 Peter, to give us access to the divine nature, to allow us to be whole again, to come into that perichoresis. That's why he does it. His power of being, he gives to us so that we can be whole, so that we can be that have that same power and strength of the perichoretic relationship. 2 Peter says, his divine power has granted us to us everything pertaining to life and godliness. For by the power that he gives us, he's granted to us precious and magnificent promises in order that by them you might become partakers of the divine nature. This is the divine nature, that perichoresis. That's what he does with his power for us. He gives it to us for our wholeness so that we can once again be part of that perichoretic circle that he is in, that strength of wholeness that he has. His power, and this is something that sometimes I think we miss, his power is never intended to dominate us. That's a different kind of power. That's a power we see in the world. It's never intended to make us do what he wants us to do. It's always a benevolent power that wants to share himself with us. So that when he asks us to do something, it's him sharing himself. Here, do this. This will help you be in that perichoretic wholeness. So that, and sometimes our language, I think, stumbles us because when we hear the word command, that's what we think, right? You just want to dominate us. You want to make us do this. But when you know who God is, it's never that. It's never to dominate. So when we hear command from God, it's not a dominating command. It's an invitation to share him. So we especially need to keep that in mind. And that's why I think that picture of that Mobius is something to keep in mind as we go into the book of Ephesians and it asks us to do things and we realize it's asking us in a different way.
So, like, when people say, well, this is what God's telling me to do, mm-hmm. Are they, like, saying it in the wrong verbiage?
It's hard to judge, right?
Right.
It's hard to say. I think, particularly after this lesson, we'll begin to start reading what we see a little differently, and then I think we'll have a little more discernment about that.
Okay.
And I do think it will actually help us be able to share with people are you doing it in a way that you're trying to appease?
Right.
Right?
Right.
You want to do this so you get this. Well, as soon as that happens, it's transaction.
Yeah.
And transaction is always linear, right? It's always here, here, dualistic, here, here. It never goes in a circle. It never goes in that. So because of that, I think that'll help us to discern that as well, particularly in our own life, because we're going to fall into that transactional way. But I think the excitement of being whole and in this perichoresis, I think will give us a new lease on what it means when God asks us to do something, and what it means when he gives us something. So, God's power then is used for us. The power of his presence is used for us, but it's also used in us. So he doesn't just say, here, I want you to join the perichoresis so that you feel whole. But in you feeling whole, it's going to help you to help others feel whole. It's going to help you to have my power to use like I use it. So in other words, getting back to that image of God, that we will actually rule like God, that we will actually, and see the word rule, we always think dominance, right? But it's not that. It's this sharing of life, being able to invite others into this wholeness rather than telling them what to do.
Can I share something?
Yes.
I went yesterday to visit a friend who is in jail and who will probably be in jail the rest of her life. And I've always struggled the last few years, like, what do I share with her? Because I feel really guilty that my life is full and I can do whatever I want and I travel and whatever, and she's stuck, you know. And so I wrote her a few weeks ago, and I decided I'm going to write her a really long letter, and I'm going to just go, like, day by day, what we did in Costa Rica, and then, like, day by day, the conference we were at, and what all the speakers said, and I just wrote her this really long letter. So I go in there yesterday, and I sit down, and the first thing she says is, thank you for your letter. I want to know about you and what you're doing, and thank you so much for giving more details on your life, you know. And she said, I don't know if you understand this, but God planted a seed in my heart that has grown, and I have this mysterious joy, and I am so full of joy, you know. And I was just like, really? You're so full of joy? Because this life looks horrible to me. And she was like, I am so full of joy. And the witness that she has been to the girls that come through, and she said, I get on my knees in the morning, and I get on my knees at night. And now some of the other girls in the pad come, and they get on their knees with me. And I met another girl that she was friends with there, and when I first met her and started talking to her, she said, your friend saved my life, you know. So it was just like everything you're saying. I'm like, yeah, and maybe not have to be in a prison cell to experience that, but she's okay, you know. And I don't even think I'm sure she doesn't want to be there for life, but I don't think she's even jealous of my life, you know, which is kind of how I was looking at it. But
yeah. And that she wants you to share her life, your life.
Yes. Yeah.
It tells you a huge thing. She's open to that because she's whole. It's interesting that Ephesians is written by Paul, who is in prison.
Yes. Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Not surprising. Thank you, Robin. That's really helpful to get some meat on that, what that looks like. So when God says he's given us power so that we can be whole, but he also says, I've also given you power for the common good, for you to invite others into this wholeness, so that you actually have the ability to do exactly what I do in my wholeness, so that you have the ability to be present, to actually display this power of wholeness. You have that ability when you're in me. You have the ability to walk in a room and be so present that there is this vulnerability and this openness and this compelling invitation. You have that ability because I'm in you. 1 Corinthians 12:7 says, but to each one is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good, so that he gives us that Spirit. Remember Jesus opening up that time of saying, come in me, so that you can hold on to the Spirit as well, so that you can actually be my image bearers and do exactly what I do. So that means that there is some part of us that has to receive that power. It's a gift. We talked about that last week. I can't say, in fact, there's a passage in Acts where the guy sees Peter and John doing these great things. And does anybody know what he says? He says, I want to do that. How much does it cost? I want to pay you so that I can do what you're doing, so that I can present this wholeness. And they're like, you can't, this isn't something you can buy. This is something that's given to you. And the only thing in being given it to is actually receiving it. Like, there's lots of times where you're given something and you don't receive it, right? Because, and we don't know you don't receive it until we never see it again, right? You don't use it, you don't wear it, you don't talk about it, you haven't received it. And so the power that God has for us in being perichoresis, I don't laugh, but I think, how do you work that when people say that their relationship with Christ is a private thing? Because that actually means you didn't receive it. Because what's the one thing about perichoresis is it's completely out there. It's not private. It's not hidden. It's completely out there. So I don't know what you've received. If it's a private faith, I don't think you've received this God that we're talking about here. So receiving power means that you're joining that perichoresis of God's presence. You shall know, John says, Jesus says in John, you shall know that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you. I mean, there's this beautiful, yeah, see, you're dancing in that perichoresis with me. And we receive the power, we join the perichoresis by receiving the Spirit. I will ask the Father, Jesus says, and he will give you another helper, that he may be with you forever. That is the Spirit of truth. So that we receive the Spirit, but we receive it in weakness. And that's one of those big issues that's talked about throughout Scripture over and over and over again. And sometimes I think we never fully understand it. But that weakness, when Paul talks about that God's power is more fruitful in weakness rather than power, that weakness means that opening up to serve me. I allow God to serve me, which we don't like, right? That just sounds, no. I mean, isn't that what Peter said? Absolutely not, God. You're not going to wash my feet.
Yeah, until God said that we had to. And I said, well, wash me all.
Right, exactly. Let me do some of the controlling here. But the receiving, the weakness, is actually being open to letting him serve you. Open to being penetrated by his life. That's the weakness that he's talking about, that you allow him to penetrate your life. Be vulnerable, being allowed to be indwelt and served by his Spirit. And here's the big thing, and this is where we're going with Ephesians. Receiving the power not only means joining the perichoresis, receiving the Spirit here in weakness, letting him penetrate you, but it means that you do that receiving in both your mind and your body. And here's the problem. We have emphasized the reception of the Holy Spirit in our mind throughout modern Christianity. We have emphasized it to the detriment of receiving the Spirit in the body. We don't even know what that means. What does that mean, receiving the Spirit in the body? Because remember that this doesn't go in one direction. A linear could only go one, either back or forth. This goes both ways. So that I receive the Spirit not just in my mind and not just in my heart, but also in my physical body. This is one of those points that I want to, this is why I'm doing this lesson. I want to drive home to, we still live very Gnostically, where the body is just not worth anything. We've got to understand that God is incarnate, that he is body. There is a reason he came in our in a human body, to say the body is just as important as the mind, as your heart. It's just as important. If it wasn't just as important, we would never had a physical Jesus. There would have been no need. But he's showing us that this physical world, the material world, started out good, and he intends to restore it as good. So that receiving the Spirit in the body is just as important. It's not the only way we receive it. We do receive it in our heart, but we also receive it in our body. And I think this is one of the places where we're not very strong in that. We don't do that very often. But I think it will change our idea of what it means to receive the Spirit.
That's what James is talking about.
Yeah, I do.
When he says, uh-huh. You know, your faith is what you do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is what, and the interesting thing, James was probably the first letter written in the Scripture. And I think that's why. I mean, this is really important that we know that in our bodies we do this. We are really good as Western Christians about our thinking theology. Mm-hmm. But our body theology?
Is that what Paul is addressing then in Romans 7? When he's saying, the good I would, I do not, and the evil I would not, that I do.
Partially, yes. Yes, partially. That has something to do with that. So what you're going to see in most of the New Testament is a back and forth between both. So you'll see some of the back and forth in Ephesians. I'm really zeroing in on the body part of the Ephesians. I think it will give you a really different way of coming at what it means to be whole. I really think it'll give you a different idea of that. Romans 12:1. I mean, Romans has a lot of this. What does Romans 12:1 say? I urge you, therefore, to present your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship, spiritual service of worship. And at some point, maybe I'll go into that, but that spiritual service of worship, oh, I mean, it just opens up a whole sermon in just that those few words.
It's connected to when we talked about work.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Work is worship. Work is worship. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's where we're going in Ephesians. And that's why we talked about what made you feel confident. It kind of gave you some kind of presence. I want to just show you a clip. Well, let me say this once. When we have Christ dwelling in us, when he's penetrating our life, when the Spirit is penetrating our life, we actually have that presence, the power of presence. So presence in us actually exudes out so that people see it. We know that, right? Sometimes we say, oh, that person has real presence, right? You've heard that before. I want to show you just these few little clips, and I hope I can, I mean, they're just like 2 minutes here, 2 minutes there, 2 minutes there. Has anybody ever seen the movie The Intern?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, I just watched it.
It is so cute. It is so cute. But it really shows this retired man with presence. He has got such presence. And it starts out with what he wears. So interesting. So I'm going to show you these two clips. It was not a big enough clip to bring down the whole computer, so hopefully you can see this. Oh my goodness, really and truly. So this is, okay, the funny thing is this is Robert De Niro. And we're watching it and we'll say, this is like Robert De Niro from The Godfather, from Cliffhanger. You know, he's naming all of his rough roles. And this, he is just like, I can't say teddy bear, that's not a good word for him. He has presence. So I'm going to try to see if I can find the right clips and see if you can actually.
I would tilt the screen down a little bit too.
Down? Mm-hmm. Yes. Is that better?
Yeah, because we're lower than you.
Oh, okay. So let's see if I can find this. So he is a senior citizen. He's 70 years old, and he's coming to work for as an intern for this very powerful woman, socially powerful, not powerful like we're talking about. All right.
Don't feel like you have to dress up.
I'm comfortable in a suit if it's okay.
Old school.
At least I'll stand out.
I don't think I need a suit to do that.
Okay, so that's one.
Doesn't matter.
So what he wears. This is like a Google, and everybody's, you know, in jeans and t-shirts. There's a couple things about that. And here's this 70-year-old guy, and, like, he becomes, like, everybody's best friend. And then, so this powerful woman that he works for, Anne Hathaway, is very stoic, never lets anybody into her life. She doesn't want him as her intern. She just thinks it's. But throughout this, he just, with his presence, he doesn't bully her, he doesn't force her to take him on. This is kind of what she says to him as he just continues to be himself. Let's see if we can.
The truth is, something about him makes me feel calm, more centered or something. I could use that, obviously.
So she said, something about you makes me feel calm and centered. What he did in his presence, he's going to wear a suit because this makes him feel like who he really is. He helps people. And if you watch the whole movie and you go through what we're doing today, you'll see that he's just open. And this woman, who is very hard, she doesn't want to have anything to do with, I mean, she is the boss. She comes to him, and there's one point where she says, trying to name who he is. And he says, you know, I'm your intern. And she goes, no, I was going to say, you're my best friend. And it's really moving. I mean, there are times you just, yeah, of course, you will cry at seeing this. I give that only because I know we've all met people whose presence you want to be there. I remember, a Willow Creek conference several years ago. There was a woman called Mama Maggie. I've never been in the presence of anyone who had more presence than her. Mm-hmm. My guess is Mother Teresa. She was a Protestant Mother Teresa, very, very similar, wore very similar clothes. I mean, we're in this auditorium of thousands and thousands of women, of people. Everyone is just like leaning in, like, I want to be there. We know people like this man who have this presence about them, and it makes people want to open up themselves. So, is that what God's giving us? Presence? Actually, in the physical world, presence? So, what I want to do is just give you some research that social science has done about presence, about personal presence, and the power that it actually has. It's fascinating. So I've brought you lots of social science, like with Brené Brown, right? So I've read all about this scientific research on presence, and not surprisingly, Brené Brown happens to be helping this research. You're like, okay, I'm not surprised as I'm reading through this. So presence is really the power of a harmonized self. This, like, completely harmonized. Everything is holding one another up. This is the social science definition of presence. It is the state of being attuned to and able to comfortably express our true thoughts, our true feelings, our true values, and our true potential, who we really are. It's confidence without arrogance. I'm going to give you a more theological definition. It's the confidence to be your real self, the wholeness of being united with God and knowing that within the perichoresis of his being, his love, my worth is continually being lifted up. When I know that my worth is continually being lifted up, I mean, it frees me to be whole, right? And it frees me to be present. So this is all research done. Presence is the strength to be vulnerable. When I'm feeling confident of wholeness and I'm confident that my value is never going to decline because it's being held up, I don't feel the need to protect myself. I don't feel the need to present an acceptable me. I don't feel the need to pretend or hide. It creates a sense of openness and availability. So being present, having presence, creates this sense of openness and vulnerability because I don't need to protect myself. Having presence issues an invitation. Genuine openness is very compelling because it makes the other people feel safe. It's exactly what we saw in these clips. Here was this woman who was so protective, had so many walls up, and she's the first person that she's able to go, "You're my best friend. You make me feel calm." There's a scene in it where she never sleeps. You know, it's this typical CEO thing, and she never sleeps, and, you know, maybe 3 hours at night, and she never sleeps. And he ends up being her driver, and she falls asleep in his car. And she's like, "That has never happened. I don't sleep. Something about you makes me feel calm." That's what happens with someone who has presence. The interesting thing is, so it's almost creating space for you to let go, right? I can relax here because I feel safe here. When you're present and available, you create, you help people offer themselves. They have a desire to offer their authentic self. The truth is, everyone wants to be known and seen. Every one of us. We don't let that happen many times because we don't feel safe. And yet someone with presence helps you feel safe. Interestingly enough, when we first meet someone, we actually, within our subconscious, answer two questions very quickly. And the questions we ask ourselves are they trustworthy? And are they respectful? Can I respect this person? Are they competent? The interesting thing is, they aren't the same value for us. Which one do you think is more important to us? Trustworthy. Are you trustworthy? That actually is the first thing that we actually need to answer, and we do subconsciously answer when we first meet someone. In fact, the words that come up for trustworthiness, we actually process the words faster. So words like honest, words like friendly, we process those words faster than we process words that have to do with competence, with being able to respect someone. Those words like skillful, creative. We process words that have to do with warmth and trustworthiness first, faster. And that's what we first go. And the reason we prioritize trustworthiness or warmth, they call it warmth a lot of times, over competence is because it's crucial to our survival. We need to know whether another person can be trustworthy with our lives, right? We need to know how they're going to handle us. Are they going to be gentle with us or not? Can we trust them? It's really important. And to tell you the truth, when I thought through that and thought through all the people I've met in my life and the people that even if I became friends with, that I still had a wall with, immediately I said, I couldn't trust them. Even if I was friends with them, I couldn't trust them. I was never quite sure if they were going to hold me with value and not exploit me in some way. So we do that subconsciously. We evaluate immediately when we meet someone. Can I trust them? And then I evaluate, are they competent? Can I respect them? All of that, that presence then actually manifests power. Our own presence manifests power because trust is the conduit of influence. That is the way we're able to influence people, if they trust us. When I reveal my true self, I give space for you to reveal your true self and for you to believe and trust that what I'm giving you, what I'm sharing with you, is beneficial and not harmful. Now, even if we just stop there, can you see the magnificent change that would make in us as images of God in the world? If we came with presence.
The world is going the other direction. I mean, now people can be boys and one of the girls, and it's all lies, 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 and it's so...
And this is exactly what I'm talking about. We're encountering all these powers that we think we have no power over. Paul's saying, wrong, you do. But it's in your presence. It's not in you forcing people. It's not in you dominating people. It's in this presence. So we're gonna talk through this all through Ephesians. We're not going to get all the answers today, but I'm going to give you some of these ideas of what that looks like. So if our presence has power, we need to understand what kind of power that is and why power is important. Why power is important for image bearers and what kind of power is important. So we're first going to look at power versus powerlessness. Before we do that, I'm going to have you do one thing. Let me have you do a little project. So remember those outfits that you talked about?
I want you to choose a mannequin for yourself. So there's a few different mannequins here with different poses. I want you to come up and choose one. Just choose fast, but which one, whenever you like. I want you to take it back to your seat, and I want you to draw on that mannequin the outfit that you described. Okay? So this is going to be your mannequin throughout. When you're done with that,
got it.
Thank you. I want you to draw that outfit. Doesn't have to. This is not an art contest. This is just giving you an idea. This is just for you. Giving you an idea of what you are like. So these mannequins should be like what you feel like really inside, who you really are. So there's one that's, they're in different poses. And I think. So I have, they're just piles. They're not going to, you know, if everybody wants the one that's, you know, running, we're not going to, that's not going to be
nope.
possible.
No.
Yeah, like this guy.
Okay. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there's 6 different poses.
I think I should get myself a bicep.
Get yourself a
Wow, I think
it's
up.
Why did I choose Mr. Complicated, though?
Somebody said that this was.
Yeah.
I think you would keep them. Yeah. I was going to. Sorry,
this one. Yeah, I know.
I'm
sure.
Yes.
Well, this is the power pose. I should pick this one. The power pose.
Okay, this does not have to be, you know, a long art project. 5 minutes.
What I typically do is this. I was trying to be like more so. But no, this is totally me. You can take this one. Yeah, you know, this is totally me.
Oh, what is it? That's me.
With a hand. There's not one.
Yeah. It's got to be a Navy blue pencil, too.
Okay, girls, you should be almost done. When you're done, are you listening? When you're done, I want you to cut it out
like that.
Yeah, cut it out. So,
which one says sexy?
I mean,
this one says sexy.
Kind of
sexy.
Out of that, you're going to keep
but this one
with you. Woo! You're going to be using it. So, so cut it out and put your name on the back.
Perfect. Put our name on the back.
Give you 2 more minutes. I can't believe no one, how many people didn't take the flying lady? I love the flying lady.
Flying or doing a backflip.
Here.
If you turn it upside down.
That's true. That's true.
Hey, so Jill, you want us to cut what I was too busy drawing? What do we do after?
Just cut her out.
Okay.
She is your little.
It's hard to draw. It's hard to draw white.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You're getting
more? But there are white pencils in there.
Here's the white. I mean,
it's hard to see.
I mean, it's great to give it a little to give it a little texture.
Yes. A little disco to it.
Oh,
like,
oh my god, that's so great.
I use
so
gray to kind of give it.
Yeah.
I feel like I should draw hair.
Yeah, I can't.
The Kentucky waterfall going to talk about that.
There's only so much to the outfit you can have. I know. Can I use those for my
walking? Okay, I'm going to let you continue on, but I'm going to keep going. So here, I'm going to warn you. I'm going to give you lots of facts. You're never going to be able to get them all down. But we're going to be talking about them throughout Ephesians. So don't get anxious. So we're going to talk about why power is important in contrasting what happens when you have power and what happens when you are powerless. So the kinds of things that happen to you and with you when you feel powerful and when you feel powerless. So when you feel powerful, when you're feeling that power of presence, it actually activates a psychological and behavioral approach system. Within your physiology, it actually activates this approach system. When you feel powerful, you feel free and unthreatened and safe. And as a result, you are attuned to opportunities rather than threats. So all of a sudden, things look like opportunities rather than threats. Because you feel powerful, you feel whole. We feel positive, and our behavior is largely unrestricted by social pressures. Is that not something we really want, right? The opposite, when we are feeling powerless, when we feel we have no power, that actually activates a psychological and behavioral inhibition system. Not an approach system, but an inhibition system, so that we become more attuned to threats rather than opportunities. So that when we're feeling powerless, all of a sudden things look threatening to us rather than opportunities. And I'm sure you can all think about at times when you were just in a place where everything seemed threatening, where everything was just overwhelming. I was in that place last night, and it almost came out of the blue. Then I just felt like I had no power over certain situations. I do pretty well under stress, but last night it just like, so much so, I told Rebecca this, last night coming home from school, I could feel it. I mean, I was just, everything was threatening to me. And I knew, I just wanted to do something about it. And what do you think I did? Not only did I eat, I stopped at Jewel to get a box of donuts. And not only did...
You've been there, Jill.
Oh, I know, I know. And if you would have seen me, and I knew doing it, and I thought, and I'm going to have to tell the ladies this. I get, I mean, first of all, it's 10:30 at night. What are people doing in the grocery store? They're in my way. Just come on, let me have these donuts. I get to the car, and I'm behind three girls who are all dressed up, and they're high schoolers, and they're taking their time, and I'm just thinking, let me get to the car. And I get to the car. Hurry up, turn on the car, because I don't want Bill thinking, you know, something's happened to me, because now I'm late. Not that he's awake, but the car's going, I'm starting to drive, and I'm trying to open the donut. I can't open those donuts. So what do you think I do? Give me a donut! No! Everything was threatening to me. Everything just felt like it was closing in on me. And I knew what was happening. It was just, I won't even tell you how many I ate. It was really ugly. There are few. Okay, so here's the answer. There are a few left, and they're hidden. But they're not hidden for me. They're hidden so Bill doesn't know that I did that. No. And he doesn't listen to my sermons. So. So, with powerlessness, when you feel powerless, you're attuned more to threats rather than opportunities. That was an opportunity for me last night. I had started a diet, of course, and it was an opportunity. Like, it's 10 o'clock at night. I actually have to get out of the car and do something for this. It was an opportunity for me to go, I can go to bed without eating. Because I knew I had nothing good to eat in the house. It was an opportunity, but I saw it as a threat. I have nothing in the house to eat. Do you see the difference? Either, oh, I have nothing in the house to eat. Yay. Or, I have nothing in the house to eat, and now I have to stop and get something. Very big difference between the two. So that feeling powerful or feeling powerless has a lot to do with actually what we do, but not just what we do, what we think. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's important that we actually have the power that God says is available to us. But what kind of power is available to us? Because as we said at the beginning, oftentimes we think of power as being this dominance, this forcing someone to do something. But there are two different kinds of power. And the social scientists call them either it's social power, which is the dominating power, or personal power, or power of presence. So those are the two types that we're looking at. Social power is the ability to exert dominance to influence or control the behavior of others. And that's usually when we hear the word power, that's usually the connotation that it brings up. I want power. I want to be able to control other people. There is some gain in that. You do get some short-term gain in being able to have dominance over somebody, but it's a very limited resource because it means you always have to be controlling somebody else. So that social power, a very short definition, is power over. It's the capacity to control not only other people's behaviors, but other people's states of mind. That's the kind of power that Satan has. He has dominance. He has power over. The other kind of power, personal power or power of presence, is characterized by freedom from the dominance of others. It's infinite because its source is the perichoresis of God, an eternal God. We have unlimited access to personal power, to power of presence when we're spiritually connected. We have access to the resources of who we really are, which is this. We always have access to who the Father, Son, and Spirit are. This wholeness. That's the power of presence. That's presence. Now, I'm going to give you some of the effects, what happens to you when you feel powerless, and then what happens to you when you feel powerful. So the effects of powerlessness on your wholeness is, first of all, it impairs thought. Literally and physiologically, it impairs thought. It causes anxiety. So anxiety is caused by a combination of how we appraise a demanding situation. We either see it as a threat or a challenge. When we're feeling powerless, remember, that psychological system comes up of feeling threatened. So I'm always feeling threatened. Feeling threatened, appraising a situation as feeling threatened causes me anxiety, which is what happened to me last night. Like, I'm so anxious. I was so anxious to get those girls. Like, I just thought, literally, my thoughts about the girls, I could tell you exactly what they're wearing. And the judgments I was making about what they were wearing, because I was anxious, they were in my way, I needed the donut. So it completely changed who I was. It did not sync with who I really am. That's what happens with powerlessness. It impairs my thought. Anxiety results from powerlessness, and it undermines the executive functions of our brain. So the three executive functions of our brain are reasoning. So when I feel powerless, my reasoning gets skewed. It affects our task flexibility. So, have you ever been doing one thing and someone wants you to do it somewhere, and you're just like, let me do this first? That comes from anxiety, which comes from powerlessness. And the third is attention control. So Feeling powerless affects our thinking. It literally changes where our brain is going.
Jill, you know, Rich has worked for the same company for like 24 years, and he could be moved and has been moved like a number of times. And I used to have anxiety and get really upset about it because I'm like, they have total control over us. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, you know, they're in control, they can move us at any time. And I would be like, I hate them. You know, like, I hate having them in control of us. And I would get panic attacks about it and get really upset. And then somebody said to me, well, do you want him working there? And I was like, well, I guess so. You know, he has a job and makes the money there. And so they're like, well, really, you're in control because you want him to have the job there. So then I started looking at it like that. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I want my husband to have a job. I want him to work there. So then I started looking at it from the opposite way. Uh-huh. You know, like, okay, we want Rich to have a job. We... you know, are in control because we want him to work there, and looked at it from the opposite way, and so we started having the control, mm-hmm. and so it helped. And
yes.
So
that's exactly it. Right. Yeah. That's exactly part of what's going on here physiologically. When you feel powerless, it changes the physiology of your brain, but you can do something about that. Mm-hmm. We will get to that. Feeling powerless also, this is I think most interesting, it makes you self-absorbed. We know that, right? But it's so funny. Being self-absorbed alienates you from others. So, because it interferes with your ability to see the world from their point of view. When I'm anxious, I'm unable to get out of my own head. I'm always like this, right? And anxiety and self-absorption are bidirectional. They cause one another. So anxiety causes self-absorption. Self-absorption causes anxiety. You know where that's going. Spiraling down, right? The more self-focused you are, the more anxious you become. And also the more depressed and negative you become.
You become a victim.
Yep, that's exactly it. Exactly it. Self-focus, here I thought this is the most fascinating. When you are self-focused, you are more sensitive to physical ailments. You feel cold more. You feel muscle tensions more. You feel congestion more when you are self-focused and self-absorbed. Isn't it interesting how it actually spirals down so that it becomes physiologically effective? So powerlessness makes you self-absorbed. It impairs your thought. It also prevents presence. It prevents you from being present. I know that you've all done this. What happens with feeling powerless is it freezes you in time so that you're never present there. You're always reliving the interaction. So you've been with someone, you've talked with someone, and immediately you're like going, oh, they probably just thought that was really stupid. Oh, that, and you begin to replay. Now you're living in the past. And the problem is, it's inhibited your thoughts, so what you're replaying is actually not the true interaction. It's actually a skewed interaction that you're replaying. And what happens is, you get into that, and then you go home, right? And you think over it more and more and more. And now it has become huge, like, oh, they must have thought this. Oh, this and this and this and this. I was horrible. You've actually created something that never happened. Your thoughts were skewed. Like last night for me, my thoughts were completely skewed. If I met those people today, I'm feeling much more powerful today. If I met those three young women today, I'd probably talk to them. I was not in the mood to talk to them last night. But it was because I was feeling powerless about my situation. Everything was just spiraling down, and I allowed that to keep going.
Sorry to keep interrupting, but you know what, too, like how you said about self-absorbed? And how, like, you have a conversation with somebody and you think, oh, I said this and this. Somebody else told me, too, you're not that important.
Well, and I've heard that before. I don't like how that's said.
No.
Because you really are
that important.
You are important,
but I mean, like, in the conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. They're not thinking about you like that.
Right, exactly.
I mean, we are that important, but we're not.
Right.
They're not thinking about us the next day about what we said at.
Exactly.
You know, 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
Like, we're replaying it, but they're not.
They're not. Well, and remember, you're replaying it in a completely different way. Right. It's a fictional replaying of it, and so they may be doing the same thing. So now you have two fictions coming together. How do we work with that?
Well, and Jill too. Like, I'm finding it really hard not to diagnose someone with this. I'm like, oh, I totally see her in this. It's like, no, that's so not what. You know, I learned it from like the first lesson. Of, like,
right. Yeah.
This is about
you.
You need to take care of where you're coming from.
Right. Exactly. Exactly, which is exactly how Ephesians will open up. So he's going to care for us first so that we can become a unified body. So not having any power, feeling powerless, helps you not to feel present and have presence. So the two go hand in hand. Having presence means you're actually present. And we'll talk about kind of things to overcome that as we go on, but some today. So those are some of the effects. There are many, many, many more. I didn't know how to pare this down to just one lesson. I was going to do this all in last week's lesson as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, it's a good thing you did.
Yeah.
last week was big enough. Yeah.
So you understand that feeling powerless is a big deal. Mm-hmm. It's not just a big deal for you, but remember, we are images of God. And if this is what we're doing, we're closing off, without our even conscious awareness, our ability to relate to others and open up to others. And we just keep, and it spirals like this, you know, and we just keep going in and in and in. So those are the effects of powerlessness, the effects of power on our wholeness. First of all, it protects us from negativism. It's a buffer against negative emotions. Doesn't mean you won't feel negative emotions, but it will give you a thicker skin against judgment, rejection, stress, and even physical pain. Our hearts and our minds are guarded then in Christ so that we aren't separated from the rest of ourselves, so that we aren't just mind. Having power allows us to be in that circular perichoresis without separating ourselves. Even when we experience, let's say you have a day where you experience a lot of rejection. This is, feeling powerful doesn't mean you don't feel rejected. It doesn't mean that you aren't rejected. You can walk in and, I'm kind of reliving last night and realizing all of the places. Almost got into an argument with a professor. I mean, that's where I was. I was in such a bad place. Even when you experience a lot of rejection, the negative emotions that you feel are actually reduced if you have felt powerful, if you've felt present. And that protects you from anger and anxiety and sadness and shame. That's a big deal, right? That's a huge deal. It connects us. Power, when we're feeling powerful, it connects us with others. Remember what kind of power we're talking about again. It's not social power. It's not the power over. It's the power from. It connects us with others because it improves our ability to read other people and to relate to other people. I mean, have you ever been in a place where you're in such a bad place that you can't read what's going on? Like, you got no idea. And you say, are you yelling at me? And they're like, what? Mm-hmm. And you step back and you go, I can't even read what's going on. Here's a really interesting thing. It actually helps you forgive more easily because you're open, you can connect with others, you can put yourself in their place, and so you can forgive more easily. It helps you, instead of adopting a vigilant stance toward others, it allows you to be open. Power, feeling power, that power of presence allows you to be open. Third, it can liberate your thinking. Remember that powerlessness really affects how you think. This liberates your thinking. It enhances your cognitive functions so that you have the ability to make better decisions under complex conditions. It helps you, I love this one, it helps you process information more abstractly. In other words, it helps you to see patterns and relationships much more easily. It makes you fearless and less susceptible to outside pressures and expectations, which then allows you to be more creative. And it makes you less self-conscious about expressing your feelings and beliefs. Man, when you hear that, you go, oh, this is really necessary for us as image bearers, mm-hmm. right? For when we're in these situations, which I think we're getting in more and more to, where the practice of Christianity is being questioned over and over and over again. And what happens is we start to shrink back, right? But there is a way for God says, you have access to everything you need here to have presence and be able to express your beliefs without any kind of self-consciousness. It also synchronizes you. So in other words, it brings your thoughts, your feelings, and behaviors in harmony so that what you express on the outside is who you are on the inside. Synchronization is a big deal with presence. In fact, it's how someone notices that you have presence. They don't know that. They can't verbalize and say, oh, everything's synchronized with you. You're feeling who you are in the inside and the outside. They don't say, like, well, that person's lying to themselves. They just say, something's uncomfortable. You ever get that feeling? You just, there's someone just like, I don't know what it is. It's synchronization. It's that everything isn't all the same for them. And all of us are in those places. We all have times of not being, of being asynchronic. Syncratic. That doesn't sound right. Off-kilter. Yeah, there you go. Much better. Much better. And lastly, it encourages effective action. Feeling powerful, feeling present, actually makes you proactive. So it gives you the freedom to decide and to act on those decisions. The decisiveness is rooted in knowing that you always have access to the resources you need. Presence is this. I always have someone holding up my worth and giving me what I need. I always have that. So the personal power, the feeling that arises from personal power is not the desire to have control. It's the effortless feeling of being whole. Feeling calm and lucid and not dependent on the behavior of others.
You don't have to prove anything. You can disagree, but you don't have to prove
Absolutely.
Anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And how many times...
Can you say that again?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The feeling that arises from personal power is not the desire to have control. It is the effortless feeling of being whole. Lucid, calm, and not dependent on the behavior of others. How many times do we say, well, they did this, so you made me. When you hear that in your own head, you know that you are not present, that you're not accessing the power of perichoresis. So, presence has a physicality to it. And this is where we're going in Ephesians, this physicality of being present, having that presence of being whole. Our internal spiritual power, the power of the Spirit of God in us, has a physical aspect. And I don't know where we've gotten the idea that the power of the Spirit is not physical, but that it's more like in our head, right? I mean, it's really, it's how we operate. It's how we think most of the time, except for maybe charismatics, because they do have some of that, right? We know that it has a physical aspect because we feel it. We are physical. God is incarnate. It is a physical thing. Presence, interestingly enough, actually affects your hormones. So when you're present and you're feeling presence, when you have that presence, your testosterone goes up and your cortisol goes down. That's the perfect match of low cortisol, high testosterone for team working effectiveness, for leadership, for confidence without arrogance. One of those off, you get completely different things. So high testosterone, and what do we think of when with high testosterone? Aggression. Men, right? Aggression. That's the power over. Men who have, women who have, high testosterone and are exerting this power over also have high cortisol. It's the low cortisol and the high testosterone that brings you that leader who can lead effectively as a team. Like shown here, this guy is an intern. He comes in as an intern, and he ends up actually ends up leading her to her best self. So that it literally, being present actually affects your hormones. It actually changes your hormones up and down. Presence expands our body language, and this is where we're going to talk a lot about. And this is why I have mannequins here. This is why you're going to have your own little mannequin there. When you feel powerful, you actually make yourself bigger. So you literally take up more space when you are powerful, which is exactly going back to the image of God, right? It's making space. You make space, you use up the space, you make sure that there's lots of space. So that all the mannequin figures I gave you are powerful positions. They're taking up more space. They're elongating. Your nonverbal behavior also, in very subtle ways, takes up more space. Your facial expressions. Which takes up more space? Which uses more muscles? Smiling or frowning?
Smiling.
You use more of your face to smile. Oh, they've done some interesting studies about using Botox for people who, to smile. I'm not going to get into it, but it's just really, really, it's just fascinating when you realize what happens, even if we do it artificially, what happens with a smile as opposed to a frown. Your eye movements, your gaze, your body movement, how you move your body, how you orient your body, your posture, your hand gestures, your walking styles, they all express either power or powerlessness. They all express it. And remember, it goes both ways. So they're saying what's on the inside, but they can also tell the inside to be different. So that large gestures say to the mind, you have power, you have presence, you have wholeness. So it goes both ways. Not only with our bodies, with our body language, but also with our voices. Interesting. So people who have presence actually initiate speech more. Now this is interesting. It has nothing to do with being an introvert or an extrovert. So all of you know that I am an introvert, and all of you know I talk a lot. And we in the world think those don't go together. But they do, because talking a lot really has nothing to do with your introversion or extroversion. But it does have to do with your sense of presence, of power that you have. So they initiate speech more often. Someone with presence makes more eye contact when speaking. They speak more slowly because they take up more time. Isn't that interesting? Taking up more time, speaking more slowly, is actually a sign of presence. They don't feel they need to rush through. They feel very entitled to taking the space of time. I don't know what that says about my Torah lectures.
unless you have a lot to cover.
Yes.
Then you have to speak a little faster. Teachers have that problem, Jill.
Yes, that's true. That is very true. Your voice physiologically actually expands and sounds bigger because the muscles in your larynx actually expand rather than tighten. And then your pitch lowers when you feel powerful, when you feel present. So a voice sounds different when there's presence. On the other hand, powerlessness collapses the body, makes you sink in more. I mean, it goes with that self-absorbed, right? Feeling here. You constrict posture. You tighten, you wrap, you make yourself smaller. So just in the sitting position, you would, you know, it would be this, it would be this, it would be this. You know, obviously that's the extreme. I'm not going to be sitting in a class like that. But just notice the postures that you have. They're telling your brain to do something, or your brain's telling them, but they're, you get to choose that. You use restricted gestures so that you might gesture, but they'll be smaller. Your walk, the gait, your gait will be very small and constricted. All I can think of is, you know, a little Oriental woman, you know, like this. But interesting, because when you think about that, and I'm just thinking there's a couple in the neighborhood, right? There's a woman who kind of walks like that. She's always walking behind her husband. Do you think there's power or powerlessness there? Yeah, and it's, you can see it in her gait. You wouldn't even have to see the husband to know. You have a short stride. You move your arms and your heads much less than if you feel powerful, you feel present. You try to take up less space. Because you don't feel whole, you don't feel entitled to be here. That's exactly what's happening. That's exactly what the last thing I was going to say is you're folding in to protect yourself because you could lose it at any minute, right? That's the opposite of feeling whole, of knowing I cannot lose my wholeness. I cannot lose who I really am because God has my back. The Spirit has my back. The Father has my back. All of that produces in my physical body. So we're going to begin to see some of this in Ephesians when he asks us to do certain things. When we intentionally practice the presence of God, then we intentionally receive the Spirit in our bodies as well as our minds. Our body can teach us to feel confident, powerful, calm, and synchronized, leading us to wholeness and presence. That synchronization, we can receive the Spirit in our bodies so that we become synchronized. We can do it through our breath. And this one's not going to be a surprise to you, right? Controlling our breath actually helps us experience the ability to control anxiety, right? When someone's anxious, what do people say? Take a breath. Take a deep breath. Most women who've gone through childbirth go through Lamaze, which is all breath training, right? It's breath training so that you can go through pain and anxiety in a different way, in a calmer way, because that helps your body actually deliver easier. Not only just taking a breath rhythmically, but singing actually helps you to breathe rhythmically. So that singing and chanting are just as restorative. So I'm not surprised that so many of you really love to be able to sing. It is your body saying, I need to have that restoration of my body feeling the Spirit, breathing in. so that we can train our arousal systems. Remember that I feel powerless, I'm feeling anxious, but I can train my mind not to feel anxious by choosing to do something with my body. Breathe. Breathe slowly. Breathe rhythmically. Breathe in.
There's like an app for iPhones and stuff that teaches you how to control your breathing. It's great.
Yes. You can do that. You can sing. You can chant. This is why the monks chanted. This is one of those ways they chant. Interesting enough, so you can even, maybe I'll get that. Yeah, I'm going to talk about the voice in a minute. Yes, exactly. So what you do physically actually changes inside you physiologically, but emotionally as well. You can change your emotions and your state of mind. Remember, we've talked about emotions before. How long do emotions last?
90 seconds.
You can, and remember, then it's your choice what to do with them. With your body, you can choose. I'm not going to keep those. I'm going to breathe instead. That's part of that. And you can change your state of mind. It's what yoga does, right? Mm-hmm. Yoga is a practice of breathing with a body movement. And actually, it's a practice of breathing with powerful body movements, right? What are most of the poses in yoga are? Power poses, right? They're power poses. Almost all of them, except even the child's, whatever that's called. That's an open pose. Why? Your hands are out like this. Your hands are out like that. So it doesn't matter whether you're standing or sitting or kneeling. There is a powerful way to do each, and there is a powerless way to do each. So our bodies speak to us. So through movement, we actually can practice the presence of God. And every time I say that, practice the presence of God, I think about the old book from Brother Andrew, right? Who talked about the practicing the presence of God. That was the name of his book. Practice the presence. Do all of you know that one? Yeah, if you're a certain age. So look it up. It's a really tiny little book written by Brother Lawrence. Brother Lawrence? Brother Andrew? Yeah, Lawrence. I don't know.
1500s.
Really, 1500s? Is that what it is? Breath prayers. And I always remember washing dishes, right? He washed dishes. You'll notice it's body stuff. He's teaching himself through the body to receive the Spirit. So through movement, our bodies speak to us. They can tell us how to feel and how to think. They change what goes on in our endocrine systems, in our autonomic nervous systems, and in our brains without us even being conscious of it. How we carry ourselves, our posture, our facial expressions, our breathing, and our voice all affect the way we think, the way we feel, and the way we behave. A single expansive pose can make huge difference in the hormones. Related to your confidence and your presence, as well as very powerful in changing how you feel. Carrying yourself in a very powerful way actually helps change your feelings. And actually, as your movements become more open, your memory of who you are actually starts to follow suit. It's so interesting that our movement actually begins to shape our memory of who we really are. It literally physiologically does that. I sit here amazed, except that we have an amazing God. That's how he's made us. And when I think about the Gnostic ways that we choose to live as Christians, I think we've cut ourselves off from our wholeness, and God must be going, oh my gosh, there's so much more for you. There's so much more here. We also can practice the presence of God through our voice. So not only through singing, but being able to slow down, to communicate more clearly. You actually have a higher chance if you're speaking more slowly and you're not afraid of pauses, direct eye contact, which is what we practice in our conversations, right? Mm-hmm. So we did all of that. Here's an interesting thing. So I discovered this last year. One of, I don't remember what I was reading, some psychology thing. They're finding that, a couple things. They're finding one of the easiest ways to get somebody out of a panic attack is for them to start naming out loud what they see. Why? Because your body just told you, you're here. You're here. Panic attacks come from not being present. So that a panic attack is most often being able to counteract by saying, wall, gold wall, refrigerator. And your voice actually helps you get back to the present. I think that's fascinating that can happen. Here's the even more, I think, amazing good news from that. They're finding that body movement, telling your mind what to do, is actually the one treatment they're finding that is successful with PTSD. Mm-hmm. So with post-traumatic stress syndrome, they've done studies. They've done the counseling. They've done all of the things that they could do. They've done medication. This, using their body to retrain. And if you want to know this, I'll tell you the book that I've been reading. It talks about the body actually felt a trauma and just got switched. The body is the need that switches it back so that they actually walk them through different body movements and large postures to feel power again, to feel whole again. I mean, it's fascinating to think that God has made our body to be able to change the way we think. So that an intentional receiving of the Spirit of God in our bodies trains our mind to follow suit in the movement of perichoresis. So that our body, I'm out of sorts. And last night, I'm going through all of this last night, calming down, sitting there eating my donuts, thinking, wait a second, what can I do with my body? And so I did some of those things. And it even talks about in bed, if you usually end up in the fetal position, before you go to bed and after you get up, while you're in bed, to stretch really and make yourself big really helps the body to come back to the wholeness of who you are. Let me caution you, and we'll probably get to this, but I just want to caution you. So it depends on your culture whether your big body, super, super big body language can be done in public or not. So in other words, if I stood here talking like this, all right, guys, this is what we're going to do here, you would all go. That would be uncomfortable for you. But if I did that before I came to you, it's about me feeling my wholeness, not about you feeling it. Because if I feel my wholeness, I actually exude it. Does that make sense?
Have you seen Amy Cuddy's TED Talk on it?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So the book that a lot of this research came out of is from Amy Cuddy, and the book is called Presence. I stumbled upon it as I'm researching Cuddy, C-U-D-D-Y. So she got a TED Talk on it. 15 minutes, you'll get a good piece of it. But I stumbled on it as I'm studying Ephesians. And I'm studying Ephesians thinking, boy, there's a lot about body here. There's a lot about body here. And then I just stumbled on it, and I'm just thinking, wow. So I don't think she's a Christian. It's certainly not a Christian book. She alludes to this comes from the spiritual world somehow, but I don't know how. So I'm connecting it for you. And she has, her story is fascinating. She was brain damaged. She is she's amazing. So it comes from her story and trying to figure this out. So she has worked with Brené Brown in that. But I want us to understand that just because it comes from the social science world, it's still God's truth, right? And it connects with what God is trying to tell us, that receiving the Spirit in our body is actually going to make us more whole, work and live within that perichoresis, so that as image bearers in the world, we are actually presenting a powerful presence. It's not about dominance over. You know, we have, you know, we're working in a world right now where we're trying to figure out, how do we work with other religions? How do we come together and have conversations with other religions? And this has a lot to do with those conversations we had last year. The conversations have to come with presence. You come with presence, and there's this openness, and you're able to share your life with them. I don't think that it is a coincidence. I think it is God-led that the science research are beginning to understand that God has made the body to actually be part of the wholeness of humanity, of all humanity. When I'm taught by the Spirit in my body to be kind, so Ephesians will say, be kind to one another. This is what we think, be kind. So inside I've got to feel like, oh, honey, that kind of thing, right? Let's flip it. Be kind to my body. Go and do something kind. A kind gesture. And a kind gesture will remind you of who you really are. You're kind because God is kind. And in fact, Ephesians is going to open up with the kindness of God. So that he opens up, this is who God is, this is who you are a part of, and then he says, be kind. In your body, walk out kindness. So our scripture verse that says, therefore, walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you've been called. Walk is a physical, do these things, not conjure them up in your head, which is really how we take almost all the commands, right? When he says, love your neighbor, what's your first thought? Okay, I'm gonna love my neighbor. I mean, it's this inner, like, I'm going to conjure this love up. And God says, actually, why don't you just do something in your body? And that will start that perichoresis. And I guarantee that we're going to see some really interesting ways of looking at what God tells us to do from a body perspective rather than a mind perspective. I also will tell you, it's going to be one of those, like, we are so ingrained, we just do it in the mind. I'm a kind person because I think kind things. You know? Yeah. Again, this is James, really. It's James with a soft tone. That's where we're going with Ephesians. So that next week we'll start with our verse, and now you'll be able to see that verse, that we are his masterpiece, created in Christ Jesus for good works. So good works aren't pious stuff. Good works are actually bodily, physically doing things so that we're whole, so that we become whole, so that we can invite to wholeness. Father, I thank you that you have made us to reflect you, to have this amazing wholeness, and that you desire it to be restored in us fully through your Son. We thank you that he gave himself for us, that he unheld the hand of the Spirit so that we might hold on to. I pray, Lord, that this week we would notice all the things about the body that you have created in us, that we would recognize you've given us the power of your Spirit in our bodies, that we can walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you've called us. May we walk in that worthy manner. In Jesus' name, amen. Before you go, leave your mannequins. I want that. I'm not going to look at them. I'm not going to display them. But just leave them on your, or you know what? Leave them on this table here.
So just put our name on the back.
Yeah, make sure your name is on the back. And then I'll give them back to you next week.
What is our homework? Is there homework then? I did chapter one, but is that part of our homework?
So lesson two. So it'll be lesson two, which is, I think it's chapter 1, 1 through 14. The what? I'm going to work on this for next week.